Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Monday, June 15th, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. It's going to be a bit of a special episode today. For those that are wondering why you haven't seen me over the last couple days, it's because I hurt my back. I was out recording on hashtag Expose Bill Gates Day, which we're going to start with today, and had a little bit of an accident. Leave it at that. And I'm not in a real good way at the moment, so I'm just kind of laid up here, and I feel like I'm going to do a little show here for you today and do my best with the unorthodox situation in which I find myself. But the last thing I can do, or should do, is stop bringing you things that I think are important. Now, bear with me in the near future, as things may fluctuate based on different things. I'm going to do my best, as always, to continue to bring you everything I can. I guess for the moment, you'll have to do without seeing my face today. I apologize. But I'll do my best wherever I may be laid up in the next so many days to continue to try to bring you the things that I can. Today's going to be a little bit of a shorter show for similar reasons, but there's a couple important things that I really wanted to go over. But I first want to just let you know that I am okay. And sadly enough, I didn't get a lot of the stuff done I wanted to do on the Expose Bill Gates Day because of this. But for those out there that did see, Derek Bros had a good stream. A lot of good people out there were doing a lot of great things. And I hope you'll take your time to look into that. Sadly, to start off with this, somebody just shared this with me before we get started. Somebody mentioned me in this article, or Last American Vagabond. Sadly, so many people, even underneath my tweet that I put out saying Expose Bill, you know, hashtag Expose Bill Gates Day and everybody should get involved, that basically so many people underneath that acted as if I, because they saw that tweet, because they incorrectly heard from some social media influencer that this was some right-wing thing, that this must be a right-wing channel. And so they go on to criticize and basically attack me with these right-wing talking points, embarrassing themselves, not realizing that this is completely a hashtag two-party deception channel, and realize that we see the idiocy on both sides of those lost on this thing. And it's so frustrating that people can't see that. And all it took was one group to say one thing, saying that's a right-wing thing. And suddenly all of these people said, oh, that's fake. And missing out and not realizing this was a huge global event that went through 15 countries, as far as I can tell. Hashtag was trending on Twitter, number one for at least an hour. And yet people want to pretend like, ah, this was nothing. This had nothing to do with anything. People commenting on the video saying this didn't really turn out to be anything. Yeah, I guess trending on number one is just not enough for some people. Bottom line, guys, this reached people. This went global. We see this. The point is, you're not crazy. We see what you see. The world is beginning to realize what they're not being allowed to look at. The illusion. Who's standing behind the curtain, right? The Wizard of Oz idea. I'm not necessarily suggesting that that's Bill Gates. In fact, they don't think it's just one person. But the point is that these people need to be called out. Far more than just Gates. But this was a starting point. And it didn't end just on that day. June 13th was a starting point. But just want to find it interesting. Expose Bill Gates explodes on Twitter as conspiracy theorists vow to avoid COVID-19 vaccine connected to Bill Gates. Now, I got to be honest, even RT lately, specifically the RT America, has been going in a little bit of an odd direction. But hey, everyone is being led by people, right? In these outlets, there's somebody at some level that is driving the discussion, usually somebody at the top who's ultimately controlling where it goes. And that happens even on RT. But the title, it says, Twitter exposed as conspiracy theorists vow to avoid COVID-19 vaccine. That's not really what this was about. I mean, that is probably one part of a huge aspect of this. Obviously, an important part of this is the vaccine and whether or not we should even be, whether that's not even something that's justified in the moment. Even for those that think vaccines are legitimate in this sense. And that's a whole different discussion that I've talked about a lot, about intent, not just the science. But the point is, as I hit my own computer, the point is that this is a reduction, even on this article. There's so many more things going on in this topic in regard to the overarching control structure and how they're taking control as we speak, using all of these things. That's important. But nonetheless, it's good to see it getting some attention. And of course, it uses one of our tweets right there, which is pretty fantastic to see. Over, I think, over 2,000 shares, retweets. It got out, guys. People see this. Somebody's saying here, the public is finally waking up. And the sad part is the whole point of this, as best I can tell, started with Derek Bros. Derek started this. And it got hijacked by a lot of different people. But it was nonpartisan. He was adamant about that. But of course, they can't let that lie. They have to use politics. They have to force it in, because when they get you distracted and emotional, that's when things never change. And that's the point. So I mark this down as a success. Not over. But as QAnon and, you know, whatever else, other things from the left try to hijack this thing for their own and make it only about their partisan politics, they're actually, the out of anybody else, the people that are hindering this more than anything. Time to get past the two-party paradigm, guys. But for the first story to start out with today, Off Guardian, doing a great job, especially on this topic. Studies, 60% of people naturally resistant to SARS-CoV-2. Now, this is a very interesting topic, because when you really think about what this means, it could go a few different ways. 60% of people naturally resistant. Okay, well, that seems to suggest something a little more nuanced than how this might be shared. So let's look a little further. New research suggests majority of people may already have resistance based on previous infections. Well, obviously, you know that's going to catch my attention based on our topic and our in-depth discussion of the evidence, not just one-sided, but all-encompassing, that shows that there's a lot pointing to the fact that this probably started, or at least was occurring in the United States before we were pointing at it in China. As right now, there is nothing that verifies where this started, no matter what anyone tries to say. The people that are trying to shout me down as a Chinese communist will tell you that it absolutely started in China. Think about that. The evidence isn't there for that. It's also not for here. It started in the United States. It's not anywhere. There's lots of data, but not proof. The evidence is popping up. The proof is not there for where this started. So just always think about that as people are trying to gaslight everybody. But having previous infections suggests to me that there's far more evidence that this was around before we got to it. And to have this many people have previous infections would suggest that this was indeed here before that. But the study and the article actually takes it a slightly different direction, which I think you'll all find very interesting. And that is potentially that this was far, far, far less deadly, even than we're being told now. The 0.26 to 0.4 from CDC, turns out this study, if even their mainstream information is correct, that would make it way less severe than it is now. Here's the article, or the study itself. As always included, the point is to remember in these, especially when you see this banner, that this is not peer-reviewed. Okay, that means that it has not, that is just another level of legitimacy that's given to these, where it's reviewed by other peers within their field of research. And there's specifically people that are, basically picked as peer reviewers that end up doing this job. So you can realize how this can be controlled. Just so you understand that, when we're in a situation where we have science and medicine being wildly politicized, bent in the direction of how politicians want it to go, then you have to consider that. Something not being peer-reviewed doesn't necessarily mean it's not real. Sort of how that Indian study that came out right in the beginning about the HIV tie, and they got forced down, everyone shouted at him until he pulled it back. Well, we now see that that is correct. Politics plays a factor. But remember that it is not peer-reviewed, and that does mean something. Okay, just so you have the study itself, it will be in there for you to look at. But the interesting part of this is what this is saying. It says a new study found that SARS-CoV-2, the virus linked to COVID-19, may be 5 times more widespread than previously thought, and therefore 5 times less deadly, which is a simple, that's basic. If it is 5 times more widespread, that doesn't change what we're seeing, right? You could potentially argue that to some degree it's being suppressed. That's always possible. But if it was 5 times more deadly, again, I mean, to use the played out analogy or whatever, to say that people will be dropping dead in the streets, right? You would see that. If it was this much more deadly, you would not be able to hide the effects of this from the average person. Not necessarily, quote unquote, dropping dead in the streets, but the idea that people, you would feel it, you would see it. There'd be a lot more going on. The point being that if their study is correct, it seems to suggest that this is way less deadly. And the fact that even the mainstream and the government are now grudgingly admitting that, I think it gives more credence to this. The fact that that's just probably their first admission. Oh, it's 2.4. Oh, actually, it's only 0.1. Oh, actually, it's not even real. You know, however this is going to go. I'm sure a lot of people are feeling similar ways. But the point is, everything is coming out challenging what they used to put us in this position. The things that they used to remove your livelihood, to remove your business, to remove everything that gave you any sense of normalcy. That's all gone now because of their false information. Or, to be kind for those that may agree with that, just simply incorrect information. Either way, ask yourself why they're not putting it back. Why they're not giving you back these things. Some places are. There's some caveats here and there. But by and large, especially from the top down, we still have our executive branch talking about vaccines. Why? Gates is the one that said we can't open again until we get a vaccine, but I thought Gates and Trump were fighting. I'm confused here. I'm not trying, I mean, I'm being facetious on purpose, but the point is that the reductive narrative that we get within the two-party paradigm is obnoxious. Because it's so simple to look past the surface level and see that there's obvious ties between Gates and Trump, between Trump and Epstein, between all of this, between Fauci. I mean, it doesn't matter. There's so many obvious tie-ins behind the scenes to make it seem like it's one person and somehow Trump is just not aware of what's going on around him. It's just silly. He's the president. He's responsible no matter how you spin it. Whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, it would be the same argument. You know why? Because we see past the two-party deception, that they're all part of the problem. Now, this is the research conducted by a team of scientists at the University Hospital in Zurich is titled, as you just saw, Systemic and Mucosal Antibody Secretion Specific to SARS-CoV-2 During the Mild Virus Severe COVID-19. Now, it says, and found that SARS-CoV-2 specific antibodies only appear in the most severe cases, or 1 out of 5, which seems really odd to me. Now, I don't know about you all. I'm not a virologist. But you tell me, are people supposed to develop antibodies when they go through? Well, yeah, that's the entire premise of our entire vaccine scientific model, right? That we develop antibodies, therefore the vaccine will help you no longer get sick. So how does this just some casual like, yeah, you know, it only appears in the most severe cases or 1 out of 5. Now, maybe that's something more common than I realize. Doesn't seem like it to me. The authors infer from this, based on the data, that the antibodies are inexplicably absent from the majority of mild cases of COVID-19. But given the known inaccuracy of the diagnostic tests and the well-documented tendencies to overdiagnose by clinical observation, right, these are all things that shouldn't be scoffed at. We have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that these things are happening and in fact being driven from people in financial positions and people in political positions to achieve a certain goal. The COVID-19 pandemonium has overwhelmingly showed us that. Overdiagnosis by clinical observation, driven by profit motives, driven by political agendas. Yep, very clear. Another potential explanation would appear to be that the absent antibodies were due to the fact the subjects had never actually been infected with SARS-CoV-2 in the first place. Right? Okay, so it's funny how we just jump to going, well, we know that they had it because it's reported. Oh, really? These are the reports that we've been trusting this whole time? The reports that were wrong about SARS? The reports that were wrong about MERS? Or rather, they lied to us about them is the truth? Reports are wrong all the time. So were the first reports that they gave us about. The point is now it's saying, oh, well, so here are the reported numbers of people who are sick. And seeing as how they don't have antibodies, therefore we conclude that they just don't develop them. Well, maybe they just didn't have it to begin with and you were lied to. We have this willingness to depend heavily on a system that has been shown time and time again to not only be wrong, but be willfully deceptive, right? I mean, that's what's so crazy about it. But so this is the first thing the article points out, and this is what I've come to appreciate from Off Guardian is, you know, having an objective, nonpartisan standpoint and go, well, maybe this is possible. And it says, and their mild, cold-like symptoms were due to something other than COVID-19, you know, like the common cold, which, remember, is also a coronavirus. However, it says, if the authors are indeed correct, about having some of them, only the severe cases produce those, in their estimation, this means, or this might mean, that SARS-CoV-2 infection rates would need to be revised down yet again, right? Because this is basic math. If they're saying that we're only getting antibody tests from the most severe, that means that they're basing their data only on testing the most severe cases because they're the only ones they can then verify had coronavirus. So bottom line, either way you look at this, it was either here long before, and this is, again, based on preliminary data, or based on their information, only the most severe get antibodies, meaning that there are a whole host of people out there, the majority, mind you, who have coronavirus but are just simply not that sick, sort of how we were talking about this in the beginning. Or people that just sort of get a little bit of sniffles and it goes away, right? That's what it says. If 80% of those infected really do not produce antibodies, then there is a live possibility the virus is present in many, many more people than usually supposed, which would in turn, I don't even know why it would be potentially, would absolutely reduce the death rate because of what we're currently staring at. Or the infection rate, or rather, any way you look at it. So this is just another study, adding to the list of all of these things. So the point is that this stuff is continuing to come out right now. And over and over, and think about how many times we've had studies that have shown and suggested things like this, peer-reviewed or otherwise, and we've got only a handful of very clearly suspect studies that seem to challenge what the majority are saying that they point to. And then they trot out their so-called scientific community or medical community, which are just a gathering of people that are tied to Fox or CNN or whatever you're talking about, people that have clearly a vested interest in maintaining the narrative, and they say whatever they wanted to say. Sort of how they trot out people that are representatives from Lockheed Martin to talk about how the war is good or how we need to invade Syria. Yeah, gee, I wonder if they've got an interest in that. The point is that most people are clearly seeing this. So consider this in that information. Remember that they started by saying 3.4%. That was based on numbers that have been shown categorically to be false. Here we are, still pushing stuff in, and wait till we get to the next part, because it's still coming. It says many experts, remember this, as this is Ioannidis, I believe, from Stanford, who predicted these would be wrong, right? And remember what happened to him when he said that? They laughed at him. Oh, you're so crazy. You're a quack. You should lose your job. I saw all these things online from the peanut gallery, the people who overnight became instant experts on all these things that Professor Ioannidis, you know, actually went to school for. Not that you should blindly trust him either. But suddenly all these Twitter experts who listened to one person on CNN or Fox News knew that he was crazy, right? Well, guess what? He was right. And guess what? None of those people did. Went back and said, hey, you were right. My bad. They just went on to the next talking point. That's what the two-party paradigm does. It's just frustrating to see that continue. But remember, too, as well, guys, that right now, the estimates from Japan to Iceland to Los Angeles, 0.06 to 0.4. Right? So 2.6 in the middle, but we're talking some places 0.06. Remember, the flu, 0.1 or more. Because remember, the idea is that 0.06 to 0.04, that is within the range of seasonal flu. You get a really bad flu, it can get up pretty high. 0.06 on some places, and yet we're still losing everything. Unbelievable. Now, it says another study from last month, meanwhile, has found evidence up to 60% of people may be partially resistant to SARS-CoV-2 without ever being exposed to it. Now, how does that make sense? It says, importantly, we detected SARS-CoV-2 reactive CD4 plus T cells in 40% to 60% of unexposed individuals. Really? Suggesting cross-reactive T cell recognition between circulating common cold coronavirus. Okay, that's definitely something that would, I guess, make sense. That there's some kind of crossover between other coronaviruses, which, by the way, would then suggest that they clearly knew that the flu vaccine was going to make this more severe, which is probably exactly what they tried to do. That's just my opinion. If you don't remember the study, the U.S. military did their own study years before this that showed that flu vaccine, the vast majority of the time, made the coronavirus that you were experiencing 36% more severe. If you took the flu vaccine, that was on it. They knew that. That was there. And yet still, even the military suggested that they take flu vaccines. Think about that. But this could also mean that it was there before, that they didn't just have the common cold, but that they actually had the same thing as it came through before we noticed it or were told to look at it. It says, in other words, large numbers of people may be immune or resistant to this virus because they have already been infected by other coronaviruses. Yeah, or by the coronavirus, by COVID-19. Either one would make sense, understand, because you would indeed gain resistance, such as antibodies, if that was the case. This may not be surprising, it says, given the close relationship between most coronaviruses, but it further indicated that the virus, known to be harmless in the vast majority of cases, is neither especially unique nor especially dangerous. But here we are, with things continuing to push in. And an interesting question to ask yourself is, while this is continuing, realize that, you know, almost 2 weeks later, the U.S. government is still funding the World Health Organization. Interesting, right? Seeing as how that was a really big point for one part of the two-party deception. But they haven't done it yet. Now realize that doesn't mean that he's not going to. There could be more being played out behind the scenes. But it is interesting that it was such an adamant point and so necessary and based on, in their minds, and based on the narrative, right? That basically the World Health Organization is what, an asset of China? That they're helping China cover up a pandemic. That was the argument. There's no way to nitpick about that. That is a perfect reduction of it. That they are working with China and help them cover up how severe it was. That was the almost literal translation of what Trump and Pompeo were saying. So if you're telling me that they think that they are actually working with China to help hurt the United States in that way, that they would just let two more weeks of continuing support go on, that they would continue to allow their personnel to work with the World Health Organization, there has not been an official anything. Nothing has happened other than Trump's verbal statement. There are still U.S. personnel working with the World Health Organization right now. So if you're telling me that they actually thought that they were working with China, that they would allow that to happen? Yeah, probably not. That seems just as flimsy as the left saying that Trump's a Russian asset, but yet giving him more money to go to war. You see, it's about a two-party deception. The reality is these people are all going to continue to work together because they're the ones really doing things that you can't see. Your party system is all to keep you distracted. To keep you thinking you're so involved and you're voting in and you're changing the world while just taking a box and walking home and thinking you're doing everything while they're allowing you to think that. It's been a long time, if ever, since that's ever done anything. The evidence has continued to pile up. But I digress. The point here is that they are continuing to fund them. Dale reports that this, the close of this week, the U.S. has still not cut its funding. Now, to be clear, for those that may not have seen past shows, I think the world, and I've said this long before this all started, right? For those that just woke up to the new political talking point and think that they know everything about everyone's decisions, the World Health Organization has, in my opinion, always been a defunct international organization that's been overwhelmingly politicized predominantly by the United States government, right? You can see that. It's overwhelmingly clear. If you go back to these previous events, SARS and MERS and the way that they handled them, the U.S. government is basically controlling the World Health Organization. So I find it very suspicious and suspect to see the way this has gone today. But to be clear, I've always thought that they shouldn't be there. Same thing with a lot of these international organizations because they're defunct. They don't work like the OPCW. They are completely bastardized and taken over by corrupt governments. Okay, and it's pretty much the same argument they're trying to make about China doing that. And I'm not even saying that's not happening. My point is that what their narrative is not really what the argument is. I think that the real string pullers want all of this to be happening, and they don't care who's involved. So the illusion to make it think like there's some divide here, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. But that's my take. As always, I really hope you'll come to your own based on the information, and especially if you disagree with me. But it says Trump made the final statement. Remember, May 29th, he said this. That they were immediately pulling all funding, and it was, you know, whatever. He accused them of being in Beijing's pocket. Now, the U.S. at the time was very adamant, the U.S. government, that this was the case. Pompeo stood up, a lot of people stood up, but it's been over 2 weeks. He said, because they have failed to make the requested and greatly needed reforms, which, by the way, the U.S. government doesn't have control over them on paper, right? That's what's funny. Well, I pointed this out when it happened, that Trump was basically upset because he didn't have control over him like he thought he should, which That's not how that's supposed to work. Neither China nor the U.S. is supposed to be able to dictate their actions. But see, that's the point. It's not that China was doing anything, even though I think they probably are. That's not the point. The point is that Trump wanted to be able to tell them what to do and either couldn't or they made it out to be this case. So that's the way it looked right now. But he said, because they didn't do what we told them to do, we will be today, he says, terminating our relationship with the World Health Organization. That didn't happen. He said that, but it didn't happen. All of his supporters, I'm sure right now, are screaming, look, he did this and he that'll go down in his list of successes that Trump did. He removed us from the World Health Organization. He stopped their funding. Nope, hasn't happened yet. And redirecting those funds to other worldwide and deserving urgent global public health needs is what they said. So putting the money somewhere else, not to you, to other worldwide needs, right? So not funding the American people that are struggling, but no, taking that all that 30 million and however much it was and giving it to other people around the world. But if you remember, Tedros urged them at the time to not do it. Please don't do this. We basically think it's a bad decision because of the pandemic. That was the argument. But as it says now, The Hill reports 2 weeks later, no steps toward a formal withdrawal have been taken. A World Health Organization spokesman told The Hill that the agency had received no formal notification that the United States would withdraw. None. 2 weeks later. Some are now arguing that it's not going to happen. That essentially he was given arguments behind the scenes that suggested, you know, if we just don't do anything, it'll just drift away and be, you know, whatever. That's something to consider because I think that's what's happening. Now it says right now the United States was the largest contributor or still technically is, which means, again, that all their people are still currently there. So whether it's a lump sum or continual payments every single day or however you want to look at it, they're still funding them and there are still personnel working with them at the World Health Organization, even as they're claiming that they're a, I guess, Chinese organization. But it says the executive director of World Health Organization's Health Emergency Program, Mike Ryan, said there's been no change so far. We rely heavily on our colleagues and institutions at the United States, like the CDC, like National Institute of Health, like the hundreds of collaborating centers that the organization has across the United States. We will continue to do that until we are otherwise instructed and informed. Okay, again, for all the people that are screaming that the National Institute of Health is, you know, Dr. Fauci and Gates, we can all see it and they're working against Trump and it's this big scam. Okay, so why is Trump still funding the World Health Organization that works directly with them? Why is he putting people like Salawi in positions that benefit those same people, right? Why? If you can't answer those questions, then you can't continue to say that you know exactly what's happening because you don't. We don't, none of us do. The bottom line is all these people are part of it and we need to stop losing ourselves in this deception. We really have to. But these studies are going to continue to come out. They're going to continue. And you should not take any of them at face value. But you should consider all of them. And then also recognize how weird it is that they'll champion one that says what they think and then disparage anything else that comes out against that or not even talk about it. Right? That's very suspect for a supposed news organization, right? Whereas we'll show you the ones, even the Nature study, that completely challenged what I'm saying. Why? Because you have a right to know about it. Because you're an intelligent individual, and you have a right to consider all the information and come to your own conclusions. Even if I disagree with them, that's your right. That's probably why you come to this show. But I will show you things like this and allow you to make your own decisions, unlike the mainstream media. The mainstream media, by the way, that is still saying that this is what needs to happen. Pentagon starts bailing out companies that have lost business due to Corona. Oh, really? Lost business? You mean like those 40 million plus Americans that are unemployed, they just lost their jobs. I haven't even seen any legitimate numbers to show you how many Americans lost their entire small business. Why even call it a small business? That's almost in and of itself a disparaging comment. Americans lost their businesses that they built from the ground up forever because of this, right? And so now the Pentagon, right? The Pentagon who can't account for $20, $30 trillion. Let's just give them more money to bail out other companies that they work with from your pocket. Do you think that's not coming from your pocket? You're wrong. They are taking your money again to bail out more companies. And guess what? The argument, of course, is, well, these companies are going to keep their employees. No, they're not going to keep their employees. Boeing already is getting money from your pocket. And guess what they're doing? They're laying off 7,000 people. Just like I said, this is not about saving you. It's about saving them. right? If the money was about saving the economy, it would have been mandated that they couldn't fire anybody. If they're giving them free money, why are they firing people? The point is the money is supposed to maintain the situation. All they're doing is firing people to maintain themselves, to maintain their business. They'll fire everyone if they have to make sure their business stays around. And of course, their business is tied directly to the government and munitions contracts and on and on and on. Big surprise. The Pentagon has begun to bail out U.S. companies that have seen large parts of their business dry up amid the coronavirus pandemic. Now, that is a huge stretch. You know why? Because these companies were already struggling. Because our country was already about to have a huge economic collapse, and they just pointed to this coronavirus thing and made that the justification. Now, that probably exacerbated it, whether or not it was really happening or they pushed it into that situation. Either way, that situation clearly made this worse. But all this did was cover up what they were already going to do at some point. And of course, without the coronavirus, well, then we would have been screaming and calling for heads because the same thing as 2008 was allowed to happen again and again and again, and they just don't care. But now because, well, we didn't do it, it's coronavirus, right? It's not our fault. We can't do anything about it. It's a virus. We didn't do it, right? Well, as this continues, and even as we see the numbers that are even actually less than the flu, as I said that incorrectly before, it may even actually shown to be in 0.06 is in fact far less than the flu. So, as we see that, and as this continues, we need to be asking why. We need to be demanding that they stop. And demanding that these funds go back to you. Because why do we need these things right now? Even if you did think we need them, wouldn't you argue that your livelihood is a little more important than paying executive bonuses, which is what happens every single time, which has already happened now, which has happened in 2008, and yet we're crazy, right? And again, the main point, bailing out these companies amid this whole situation, why? Well, of course, in a bid to make sure they can still make weapons, right? Because that's what we need. Right? Because that's what every American wakes up in the morning thinking about. God, I hope our government can make weapons today, right? Not like, can I feed my family? Or if I, you know, do I have a job? Or am I going to pay my bills? No, we go, please make sure they can make more bombs today. But you see, we're literally look like from the mainstream perspective, they act like we're ridiculous for pretending this isn't the most important thing in the world. As we're the ones, the government's the ones marching around, making war, destabilizing countries, and then pointing to those problems and saying, see, we need more weapons, so give me more money. And then they give the money, and then when the problem arises, well, guess what? They take more from you to make sure those same people can keep doing the things that they've already taken money from you to keep doing. It's a perfect situation because we always pay for it. On Wednesday, officials announced that five mid-tier defense companies had received a total of $135 million. Now, understand, that is nothing in the large scheme of what we've already seen go away. Trillions. I would argue that we're getting close to $10 trillion here, but all said and done. That's outrageous. But, okay, don't forget that we're also unaccounted for $20 trillion. But you see, we just don't. All the money's just flying out every which direction. Who cares, right? Because coronavirus. The $135 million can do a hell of a lot for American people. Just do the math on it. Break it up between even the small business loans, right? I mean, you could do a lot with that money. But no, they're taking that from your pocket in the middle of a pandemic crisis, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, whatever situation you find happening. The reality is that you're struggling in one way or another, regardless of how it's gotten here. But in the middle of that situation, they're taking it from your pocket and giving it to businesses who already are very profitable and making lots of money and could probably do just fine. Like, imagine everything shuts down, dead stop. No one's making weapons, no one's buying anything. Who do you think will survive longer, a multi-billion dollar company or your four-person family? Don't think too hard. I think we can all think pretty clearly that multi-billion dollar company, yeah, sure, they're going to struggle too. But we all are. The point is that they want to make sure that those companies don't struggle, but they're willing to allow you to struggle. Because the argument, the straight out of Reagan's trickle-down economics BS, is that, well, if those companies do well then America does well. That has never been true. And it's never been less true than today. That's what we're staring at right now. Give these companies all this money because they need to sustain. No, give it to Americans who don't have what you took from them. To, quote, help sustain defense critical work force capabilities in body armor, aircraft manufacturing, and shipbuilding, right? All the things we need to produce a normal, safe country domestically, right? No, all the things we need to maintain our aggressive foreign policy. These actions will help to retain critical workforce capabilities throughout the disruption caused by COVID-19. How in the world will these retain critical workface capabilities? Workforce, excuse me. Okay, so you're going to make people build those things? Well, those jobs already existed. And to restore some jobs lost because... So basically, you're turning this country into a war, even more so of a war-focused country, right? So now you've hijacked everything. You've destroyed all of our businesses. You're going to make all the people who don't have a job turn into making weapons and making things that you need, making masks and whatever else. We're a pandemic wartime country now. All we do. And remember, that's the new normal, so it's not going away. This is how they want you to view this reality. It says a senior Pentagon official told lawmakers that DOD plans to ask Congress for money to reimburse many of its contractors, excuse me, for COVID-19, for COVID-related expenditures. For example, wages paid to keep employees on the payroll despite idle production lines. Okay, so this is what they're saying. Doesn't happen, though. Right? I mean, Boeing, which is mentioned in this article like five times, is a perfect example. Boeing already got money. Right? Did they make sure that they kept all the offices, made sure people were still there? No, they fired 7,000 people. After they took your money. It says these moves will buttress earlier Pentagon efforts to shore up its COVID-19 rattled contractors, including paying firms more money up front. Got to take care of those weapon manufacturers and awarding multi-billion dollar contracts earlier than planned. So we're just, think about how crazy that is. So we have people making guns and bombs and things and, you know, protect vests and masks and whatever else for the military. And because they're rattled, because, there's not going to be war because of COVID. Well, don't worry. Here's money. Take money. You make contracts. Just do things anyway until we get back to our war-focused state. I mean, it's just crazy. It's crazy that we can't take a step back and go, okay, let's just pause for a minute. Let's just not make bombs and weapons until we get ourselves. I mean, but that's not even possible. Whether you look at it because of the way this country functions or because there's too many people making too much money to say, who cares about it? They don't care about you. Don't you dare stop my money machine. That's how they're thinking. Now, here's what gets most ridiculous to me. It actually says here, that the CARES Act allows defense companies to recoup money they used to keep employees working amid the pandemic. Right? So the CARES Act is giving money to defense companies to recoup money they used to keep employees working. Okay, so first of all, that money could go directly to the people as opposed to paying a company to pay. They could just give money to American people, but that's not how this money has to go to keeping the companies, which is what they care about the most. But on top of that, we already see examples of companies taking money from the CARES Act and not doing anything for their employees. So the CARES Act, which was sold to you as taking care of you, is at least in part, and I've seen a large part, bailing out big companies, which wasn't even supposed to happen. It says, but while Congress authorized these disbursements, it appropriated no new funds to cover them. If lawmakers don't provide the money, Lord said, Pentagon officials would likely have to cut weapons programs. Oh, no. Oh, no. No, that won't happen. Don't worry, because they're just going to make up a new bill in 30 seconds. You know, and when it's something that you care about, like for a lot of Americans care about health care, you know, those bills will drag on for years. But of course, they need more weapons. Oh, we'll get it done in 3 minutes, right? By tomorrow, we'll have a bill that we'll put up. We'll even read it. Who cares? That's how our country works. But you'll see things like Lockheed Martin mentioned in here. Basically giving them lots of money. Six largest defense companies, $8 billion. I mean, I hope you'll take a minute to read this for yourself, because there's a lot of details in here about who's getting what. As I said, Boeing is mentioned quite a bit. There's a lot. But the point is the money's still going out. The money is still flying out. From a company, by the way, the Pentagon is the one asking to bail out these companies. The Pentagon, who can't account for over $20 trillion from you. You know, that already went to black budget projects and, you know, destroying things in regime changing countries, stealing assets from foreign, you know, all the things they don't want to tell you about. But bottom line, that's money that came from your pocket. That is more than the entire debt of this country. as I always said, it's kind of an interesting point that, you know, this doesn't actually translate. But, you know, the idea is that, well, we're in debt $20 trillion and we can't account for $20 trillion in the Pentagon. Well, gee, doesn't that seem to factor in that if we didn't waste money in the Pentagon, that we might not be in debt? Think about it. But again, I stress that's not how it actually translates. But realize that there's waste happening. And yeah, it would generally translate to the fact that we wouldn't be in debt like we are if we weren't wasting money on military expenditures that we're told that we need that we really don't. And this is exactly the point. The Pentagon can't afford all of its toys. Can't afford it all. I promise you that it's going to come back and say, well, here, good, we got this done. Now we can. And you know where that money comes from? Your pocket. Based on projected funding levels, the military will be forced to choose winners and losers among its projects. Oh no, you're going to have to choose which illegal regime change you have to give up on? That's just sad. Well, see, the thing is that they're not going to do that, though. Even if they don't have money for it, they're going to maintain their regime changes. They're going to use foreign assets. They're going to use mercenaries. They're going to use other governments of which they're controlling. This is the case, and it always has been. All this is a plea to people to say, look, we need more money for our wars because we're spending money on other things, and suddenly we can't. They want people to go, oh, no, here, we need to make up new ways to make money for our war machine. Oh, excuse me, for defense of the country is how they want it to be framed, right? The Pentagon cannot afford all of the new weapons it wants to buy. Why do we need these? I mean, it's crazy. Like, there used to be a point where you would ask that question and people would literally think you were the stupidest person in the room. Laugh and go, are you serious? Like, don't you see the wars? But people are we're past this. The days of the aggressive neocon-controlled kind of war set is gone. It's still there, but people are not lost to it today. And I don't know exactly what you would point to explain that, but the reality is I think we're beginning to ask questions today. Do we really need all of this? And I think COVID-19 is a huge part of that. Everyone's been put on a stand hold, right? Everything's stopped. So what you see is aggressive U.S. action all around the world. Governments sending their drones and their ships and everything, just kind of clearly, I don't see much else going on. What that needs to show you, as I keep pointing out, is they're the ones that have been being aggressive. And they just use that to point to other things and say, that's why we're here, even though their actions caused it. Right? So now we need to ask, why do we need this? Why does the Pentagon feel that it needs to buy all these weapons? Who actually believes that with our overt, aggressive, invasive foreign policy, that suddenly the world will just collapse? I mean, who actually believes that? The stats and the data are unbearably clear. It's only gotten worse. Ever since this has started, they have caused more terrorism, more destabilization, more of every single thing they pretended they were trying to stop. I argue it's because that's exactly what they were actually trying to do. And they lied to us and said they were trying to stop it. All they did was create the thing that gave them the justification to carry out their foreign policy. It seems pretty clear to me. And in fact, we've gotten that proven over and over and over with things like Duma, with things like Bolivia, with things like every other example. We continue to prove to you that they created false narratives to sell you on. Here we are at the Pentagon saying, whoa, no, we can't afford all the things we want to buy. So we need to stand up in one voice as America and say, don't buy them. Problem solved. Says more cash is unlikely, experts say. I highly doubt that. Regardless of whether President Trump wins a second term or is defeated by his Democratic challenger. Moreover, they predict the Pentagon will face increased competition for dollars as the United States tries to dig itself out of a recession. Bruh, I love that. I love that. Kind of a classic joke, right? Like dig yourself out of a hole. Well, that is the most apt term or phrase. That's what they're doing. They're trying to dig themselves out of this hole. We'll just keep spending until we get through to the other side, right? But says, trying to dig itself out of the recession brought on by the coronavirus pandemic. Oh, of course, right? That's why. No, not. Everyone's been pointing to this for years. We saw this was coming. It may have been, well, I'll give them this. It may have been brought on the final straw from this pandemic, but we need to see that it's always been there. And this is covering it up. Now, it says, I don't want to see Biden's administration making big cuts to the defense, of course, But that won't happen. I don't even know why he's trying to frame it like that. Biden is as much a war hawk as Trump. They're all about war, all of them. Now it says, but no matter what happens, there's going to be a new national security strategy. Of course, the new normal, right? It's all new. And a new national defense strategy. They'll be, oh, it's all new. And they're acting like that's all. Remember how Trump came in and we got to rebuild the military? That's always their go-to manipulation. We need to rebuild it. We're our military's 10 times stronger than everybody else. Rebuilding it was always a lie. But see, they got people worked up. And of course, all the munitions companies use their propaganda machines to pump all everyone's, you're not patriotic if you don't believe in the military. And here we are, right? We spend more on the military than every other country combined. Easy to look up. So think about how that factors in with Russia and China and all. Oh, they're so dangerous. We just 10 every other country combined. That's crazy. Now, same thing. Oh, it's a new strategy. We're going to revitalize and buy and buy and buy and spend your money to continue to destroy the world. Defense Secretary Esper said the Pentagon needs 3-5% annual growth. So he's coming right out and saying, we need more money. You need to give us more money. We spend more money on our military than every other country in the world combined, and they're asking for more money. How in the world is this even logical? How in the world do people do not? I don't understand how this is not the most obvious thing to laugh at in the world. Remember, the Trump administration asked Congress already for $740 billion. The last time we already spent over $1 trillion a year. When you factor in all the things that they don't technically categorize as military that are very clearly military. And then you factor in all the other black budget things. We're spending way over $1 trillion a year and we're still going up. And guess what? Every year, like I keep pointing out how ridiculous it is that they ask for something and they give them more. Yeah, sure. He's a Russian spy, but let's give him more money for the military. It totally makes sense. People are so... And the sad thing is a lot of the people inside of that two-party deception on the left, they absolutely believe that lie. Absolutely. And yet their own representatives will vote to give him more money, and yet they still believe it. Well, you gotta, because the country's defensive. It's so ridiculous, the equivocations that people do. Anyway, I'm gonna keep moving forward because I could talk about this stuff forever. But the real point, guys, is the kind of money that the individual has to deal with. Right. As they're saying, you know, billions here, trillions there, you know, $2 trillion here, $4.4 trillion there, you know, just money, just, you know, big, no big deal. $1 trillion. Right. No big deal. One person. This man who probably didn't even have that at all, only hit with $1.1 million hospital bill. One person for getting what they told him he needed to fight off COVID-19. $1 million. Do you remember how ridiculous, when this started, you remember all the claims, all the administration was, oh, we're gonna make sure the tests are free. And yeah, guys, this is the most obscene example of how ridiculously bad this country is compared to just about everybody else. There are places all around the world right now where people, I mean, even in a situation where they have kind of a similar situation as us in regard to their healthcare, their government said, well, you won't have to pay for this stuff because it's a pandemic and it's nobody's fault. Well, here we are. One guy, $1 million. Do you think he's going to pay for that? Obviously, he's not going to pay for that. He doesn't have it. And I wouldn't pay for it either. I'd be like, you're out of your mind. But, you know, this just creates more debt. It creates more control. It creates everything they want. And meanwhile, they're still taking money to spend everywhere else. $1 million. A 70-year-old Seattle man. 2 months in the hospital. Considered the longest hospitalized COVID-19 patient in the United States after he fought through the disease. Probably not. Probably through all kinds of other stuff if he's still, you know, I mean, I'll get to my point in a second. Hold on. Against all expectations, coming out healthy despite what were considered multiple near-death moments. While Michael Flores' survival story was celebrated by local and national media upon his recent discharge and cheered by medical staff, a new kind of shock awaited. He was constantly attended to by nurses and doctors throughout the ordeal, at the end of which he was jokingly dubbed by staff as the miracle child. He entered the hospital on March 4th and spent 4 weeks on a ventilator. Right? So I guess he was of the, you know, 5% of people that don't die when that happens. So definitely a miracle, in my opinion. Maybe that's what they charge. $1 million for being the one person we don't kill with a ventilator. Seattle Times details that his health nearly took another blow upon exiting the hospital and seeing the whopping bill of $1 million. I mean, this is just obscene. How is it that in any sense, even in a normal sense, how in the world does this go $1 million? That's wrong. There's no way in the world this should add up to him. I don't care how you try to justify, oh, it's high tech and all the medicines and all the books. This is the only place in the world this happens. You are being screwed is what that is. Profiteering on the back of your problem. That's what your government and our country's administrations and businesses and however you want to look at it are completely okay with. Robbing you blind while you're at your weakest moment. It's just a perfect microcosm for everything this country represents today. All right, keep saying that, but I mean the government. I know you guys, I know you out there who follow this channel know that well enough, especially when I'm not on my game today. But the government is what we're talking about, and they're more than willing to screw you over to benefit their own. Just remember how different this is from when this first started and we were promised that this wouldn't be the way it went down. And here we are. I don't care if you're there for 4 weeks or not. Okay, fine. You're only there for 2 weeks. And oh, it's only $500,000. No big deal. People can barely afford before this all started, Americans could barely afford a $500 emergency. I'm sure that went real quick, right? In the beginning, right? But this is what we all deal with as individuals. As they're robbing you, gaslighting you, telling you that you're the one. It's your fault. You shouldn't have gone outside. It's your fault. It's happening. Well, there's a little bit more to this story that we need to talk about. And that's about BlackRock. Again, this is an article from 2015. Donald Trump ignores his friend Carl Icahn's warning on BlackRock. That's not the point of the title. This is what I found most interesting. This was shared with me by somebody on Twitter. Now, remember, we're talking about BlackRock. I'm actually going to go over in this article a little more in depth about who they are, but you'll see why I paste it this way. I want you guys to see this first. For those that haven't remembered, we talked about BlackRock. They're the company that now essentially is in control of the Treasury, right? They're basically, at this point, it seems like they're in control of our financial direction of this country, both the Fed and the Treasury, it would seem. And it was decided by the Trump administration. Put in place because of the coronavirus, right? That's the argument. Well, because of all the issues and because of our financial despair and all the blah, 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 blah. But we were at the best we ever were before this, according to Trump. Okay, but then suddenly we need BlackRock. But that's not the truth because we weren't the best we were. This country was very clearly struggling despite all of Trump's... it's not just Obama, Bush, they all do it. They always lie about how good we're doing and the jobs numbers. They always lie. The last one was a best example. But the argument is that BlackRock needed to take control of this. BlackRock, which, by the way, is an overtly Israeli-tied company that adds to the growing list of overtly Israeli-tied anythings that are controlling any number of things about this country. But that because of coronavirus was why they had to do it. Well, you might find this interesting. It says, there's no doubt that Donald Trump believes in BlackRock. The real estate magnate and his presidential candidate made his biggest securities bet in one of them, despite his warnings of Carl Icahn, the activist investor he described as a friend. It says, and once liked to appoint as Treasury Secretary, Trump, the Republican frontrunner, has $25 million to $50 million in the New York City investment giant BlackRock's Obsidian Fund. So Donald Trump had $25 to $50 million invested in BlackRock's Obsidian Fund. Now, I would say right off the bat that that's an obvious conflict of interest, an obvious profit motive. Now, but first of all, we want to take a quick look at Obsidian Fund and see what that is, the details. There's a link right there, right? Let's take a look and see what that actually is. And oh, whoops, it takes you to this really weird page. Terms and conditions with some legalese discussion about access. It says... access subject to legal description. Okay, you have to actually click confirm to go through to this page. It's supposed to just be the BlackRock website, right? That's what it's supposed to be. Well, I had to click it because I wanted to see what this data was. And guess what? Page unavailable. So not only did I agree to whatever they made me agree to, but the data's not even there. Or maybe because I agreed, the data's now not there. Either way, the Obsidian details about Trump, the deal that Trump was involved with BlackRock, seems to be missing. Now, I'm sure you could probably find it somewhere, but interesting that BlackRock, of all groups, the very site and group on which it was working with, the deal with the who later became the president, is suddenly not there. But I think what's interesting here, guys, is to realize that Donald Trump has had money invested with BlackRock before he became president. Now, remember that BlackRock hit their $6 trillion asset, which is now $7 trillion today. This was in 2018 because of Trump's tax law. So we can very clearly see potential for a little quid pro quo. But now it becomes even more interesting to understand what exactly BlackRock is and why this is something we all need to be very, very concerned about. My opinion, this is a takeover. This is a takeover by BlackRock of the world, if you will. I mean, let's be very clear. BlackRock is probably the most powerful company in the world. BlackRock, as even this article points out, their CEO, Larry Fink, is easily, if not the one of the most powerful people on the planet. Because he collectively owns, well, BlackRock controls the majority of the world's assets, the world's. Think about the control that takes. Now, if you want some kind of a motive for why somebody might trump the coronavirus numbers or lie about it entirely or make it happen to some degree, I think a all-encompassing financial takeover of the most financially equipped and militarily powerful country on the planet, that may just qualify, right? So again, realizing this overtly Israeli government-tied company that now basically has control over the U.S. government's finances, which does, and also has control over, or influences at the very least, Canada's central bank and the direction on which they invest and on and on and on, it begins to look like this could have been at least one of the things that happened underneath all of what was going on. We just saw the essential takeover of our country. But all we can point to is China and Russia, as usual. The mainstream financial press has been remarkably quiet about the Federal Reserve's appointment, this was on March 24th, of BlackRock to manage its massive corporate debt purchase program in response to the COVID-19 crisis. Now, right off the bat, guys, realize the Federal Reserve is a private company. It is not a government institution. Think about, the fact that they even have federal in their name is meant to confuse you. This was a organized deception. It is a private banking institute. Think of the Federal Reserve as essentially like the bank for the U.S. Treasury, right? Okay, so now this Federal Reserve is appointing somebody who now has control over the debt purchase program for the Treasury. So you now have a private company appointing somebody that has influence and overt control over the government's assets. And this is the point of having the private company pretending to be a government agency. We are being sold out. You as an American are being sold out. Don't you think that we should vote or at least be told then something like this happens? I mean, I sure as hell was screaming about it, and I have been since. Where was the mainstream media, right? They've been remarkably quiet about it. I wonder why. This is easily the most important financial move that's pretty much ever happened in this country. But they don't care about it because all they can do is get you worked up about race, right? But it says, the silence might have a simple explanation, you know? You just don't go, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. Or as they put it, you don't slag your boss if you know what's good for you. So the media knows that who controls them. Now, of course, even saying that, people will take that as some kind of racist slur. What I was saying right there is the banks is what I meant, the finance, right? But of course, people are always trying to make it into something I mean that I don't say. No, guys, I mean exactly what I'm saying pretty much all the time. So, you know, people out there, oh, wink, wink, I get it. Nope, didn't mean that. I mean exactly what I'm saying. If I actually thought there was one group that was controlling everything, I would say that. I don't think that. I think that's an oversimplification on purpose, as always, right? But we have to see the obvious ties to the Israeli government and their obvious connections to all of this stuff, whether we're talking about the voting stuff going in or all the things I continue to mention, or just overtly control over our government, which is what this shows us. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink may now be the most powerful man in the world. overseeing not just the Fed's new potentially $4.5 trillion corporate slush fund, but also managing $27 trillion. $27 trillion of the global economy, even before the appointment in March. So imagine adding on all of the U.S. Treasury's assets would do. As the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock already was managing $7 trillion for its global corporate investor clients, along with another $20 trillion for assets through its financial risk monitoring software. Imagine the power that comes along with that. As Andrew Gavin Marshall explained, unlike a bank, asset management firms do not manage and invest their own money, but do so on behalf of their many clients. So that translates, guys, you. But see, you didn't choose them. Your government did. But they're still using your money that the government pretends is theirs. In the case of BlackRock, those clients come in the form of banks, corporations, insurance companies, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, central banks, and foundations. Basically, like it said, this is them using, through the Fed, the assets of the Treasury. With $27 trillion under various forms of the of its management, BlackRock towers over the finance, insurance, and real estate sectors. This much consolidated financial power may be it is unprecedented. But with BlackRock involved in virtually every major corporation across the planet, including the media, even BlackRock's competitors, if that word even applies, are quiet about Fink's appointment, like you're not supposed to talk about it. Guys, this is the real thing. This is what we should be pointing to. And all the things it ties back to. I mean, this is crazy that, first of all, that it's this big and that nobody's talking about it. I mean, think about things like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, how nobody ever mentions them in regard to the wealthiest families. Clearly, there's something there. There's a reason they're being omitted. It's stuff just like this. Because these are people that have unnecessary control over finance and politics and everything. Unprecedented indeed. Virtually every major corporation across the planet, including the media, talk about control. This company now has control over the U.S. Treasury. As it says here, Rolling Stone's Matt Taibbi, he's done excellent work in regard to 2008. He called out this new bailout of Wall Street a bailout of the last bailout in 2008. Think about that. Basically meaning that they never even tried to stop what happened in 2008. They just, or even before or after, as I've been screaming about every single moment up until now, everything they did to create 2008 didn't even slow down. It just kept getting worse, even right after it stopped. They were 10 times worse right before this started, because they clearly knew they had something. They just, hey, virus, take all their money. And you paid for it again. The question is, when are Americans going to wake the hell up? When are we going to realize that we're just the tools that are being used by these globalist financial elites that are stealing everything from you every chance they get with zero repercussions? Less well known is that the 2008 Wall Street bailout was itself a bailout of an earlier 2001 Wall Street bailout, in which the Fed pumped more than $100 billion into the struggling financial sector, wounded by the dot-com bust over and over. And guess what? Under the cover of the 9/11 crisis. Oh, big surprise. Sort of like it's happening now. So under 9/11, they hide a bailout, and now they hide another bailout under that. I mean, guys, it is so apparent. The only block is just you choosing to accept the reality. I know it's not fun to look at, but this is where we are. And that calls out the Obamas, the Trumps, the Pelosis, the Bidens. It calls out all of them because they're all part of it. Now, I personally feel it's clear that Trump has a huger part of this because he's the president that allowed this to happen. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's personally involved. I do think so based on the data. I mean, it's hard to miss the fact that he's personally invested in this company and that suddenly their data about it's missing. And that his tax law is the very thing that gave BlackRock its surge, right? I mean, it's hard to miss. Use 9/11 to cover one up. They're using coronavirus to cover this one up. It says, and this is really interesting, some attention has lately been paid to the fact that during the 2008 bailout, guess what? BlackRock's Larry Fink played a major role in advising governments and corporations in how to deal with toxic assets from crashing banks. And we talked about this already. They were involved before. They were involved in 2007. So yet again, we have BlackRock being kind of a common denominator in the crises that happen in this country. Now, I'm pretty sure there was at least another point in here that I was going to point out, but, you know, I want you guys to read this for yourself, and this is already going longer than I expected. I have one last thing I wanted to point out to you guys. We're talking about BlackRock, a company, an independent private company that is taking control of the Treasury and Fed in this country. That should suddenly become a little bit more interesting. Remember that? And the Fed, right, Trump? And the Fed, right? Well, now the Fed says the full range of tools in play to counter the pandemic. Well, what do you know? It comes full circle. Might as well be BlackRock saying, hey, we're going to start using your money to do what we want under the guise of countering the pandemic. Because remember, they're in control now. Shh. Don't tell anybody. It's quite frustrating, guys. But we're going to leave it there today. Looks like we've been about an hour. That's a short show for us. But thank you for being here today, guys. I appreciate you joining me. And I'm, you know, a little unorthodox. I just had these topics that I just really had to get to today. I really wanted to make sure you guys saw this stuff, share it, talk about it. There's a whole bunch of other things I could have gotten into. There's, you know, the issue in regard to the person who just got sentenced to jail in Russia and what that means and how Pompeo is being a hypocrite about it and the foreign policy and, you know, all these, there's so many things to get into, but these were important for you to see. So I'm going to leave it there for you. Hopefully that'll reach some people. I'm going to do my best to get to keep up on these shows, even if it has to be a show like this while I'm kind of laid up here. But either way, I will continue to bring you the content and, you know, keep up my Twitter account for those out there, guys, or any other accounts that I share this stuff to see what's going on. I do try to give you some information as well as our Discord for those that want to see what's going on, but I won't stop. Don't ever worry about that. I'm not going away. No matter what happens, I will continue doing this as long as I'm able. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
I want to make the case for secrecy in government when it comes to the conduct of national security affairs and possibly for deception.
You would lie in order to preserve the truth.
If I had to say something I knew was false to protect American national security, I would do it.
But you took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and the Constitution mandates certain openness and certain fairness. You're willing to do away with that in order to achieve a temporary military goal?
The Constitution's not a suicide pact.
But you took an oath to it.
I don't make any apology for it.
When I was a cadet, what's the cadet motto at West Point? You will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It's like we had entire training courses.